Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome in to Slapshot Radio on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. COVID-19. Well, right now I think I'm up to the COVID-15 so far. You stay in for long enough, and unfortunately the weight starts coming back. Doggone it. We can't stop the hockey talk tonight. We're going to talk about the evolution of the enforcer in the NHL with the Grim Reaper himself. Stu Grimson going to be joining us. We're also going to talk about our favorite enforcers, maybe even our favorite fight that we've ever seen. It's all brought to you by day one sponsor, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Carter Church from Weichart Realtors, the Andrews Group, your real estate expert in Murfreesboro. And the latest addition to the Slapshot Radio family of advertisers, our good friends at Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. They have a curbside delivery for all your adult libations. And, of course, our friends at Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries Nashville, with three locally owned and operated locations in Middle Tennessee. And you can check them out online at lazyboy.com. I'm Paul McCann. Our co-hosts are former NHL player and coach Brent Peterson and the host of the Preds Watch Parties, Zach McCann. Coach, how are you this evening, sir?
I haven't moved since last Monday, so I've been here the whole week.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. Has Tammy at least dusted you once or twice just to make sure, you know?
She's tried to kick me out 10 times. I just won't go anywhere.
Yes, indeed. Brent sheltering in place. And with me in the studio is, of course, Zach McCann. Zach, how are you this evening, sir?
Oh, you know, sure as Carol Baskin Fetter, husband to Tigers, will be here on Monday talking hockey.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm kind of curious. Brent, have you even sampled the latest craze on Netflix, Tiger King?
Yeah, I've heard about it. I was watching the other day. I was watching The Ranch, which was right after it on Netflix. But yeah, it's supposed to be pretty crazy, that Tiger thing. Yeah.
I watched the first episode, and I know you binged it in one day.
Yeah, not just one day. It was one sitting. I started at 2 p.m. and finished at 7:30 p.m. because quarantine.
Yes, indeed. See what happens when there are no sports. Oh, man. Unbelievable. So, you know what? We've got we actually have quite a few things to talk about tonight. Obviously, no hockey games, but it's been kind of interesting to watch some home games on the rebroadcast. Coach, I mean, the last couple games have been rebroadcast of home games that, you know, normally were there. So it's kind of interesting to watch the coverage from a television perspective.
Yeah, it was good to see you. I watched two games. I watched half of one game, and I got to change the channel. And I watched half of the other game, and I changed the channel. And it was interesting because you're sitting up. I sit up top there in the press box, and you remember plays that were going on. Or you can remember the goals, and it was pretty interesting to see how that worked. You don't get much of a chance to ever go over the games because you're on to the next one all the time. So I think it was pretty cool that we were able to see it and get an idea what goes on when and see the whole broadcast too. You don't get that at home a lot either. So it was good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting to get to take an analytical eye when you're rewatching something. You know, when you're first seeing that game take place live, it's very easy to get caught up in the emotion of the sport because that's
right. Heck.
Why else would we watch it if not for that? Mm-hmm. But here you can kind of take that cold analytical gaze to it and say to yourself, all right, what is this team doing? And not only that, how is the opposing team counterattacking what is happening up there? And it really kind of gives you a better appreciation for the game when you see kind of the difference difference between some of the games that we've seen in the Peter Laviolette era and the minute changes that you see in the John Hines system and some of those rebroadcasts that we've seen so far. It really does make for some fascinating hockey to watch.
And you know, what's really been interesting is that they've also, you know, replayed the Winter Classic a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
which I always fight the urge and usually lose to change the channel after the first period and pretend we won. But it's fascinating to watch these replays at times every Thursday and Sunday night on Fox Sports Tennessee, some of the better games of the 1920 season being rebroadcast. And you also look at and guys, you know, today is actually an anniversary of sorts. 8 years ago tonight, the Nashville Predators franchise won their 500th regular season game in club history. 500 regular season wins happened tonight, 8 years ago. And, oh, man, you know, you had to love it because that win came over the Pred Nation's first hate when it came down to fan bases and teams over the Detroit Red Wings. And not only that, they did it at the Joe.
It does make you think, though, because you think about the rivals that the Preds have had over the years. And do you think, you know, in the wide, long history of the Nashville Predators, and it is cool to say that now that this team does have history, is Detroit the apex rival, or was that supplanted by Chicago?
Coach, what do you think?
I think it was supplanted by Chicago, and then I think even San Jose and Anaheim have been our rivals, not to Chicago's extent, but to Anaheim and San Jose. We both played them two or three times each in the playoffs. We beat Anaheim every time, and I don't think we've beaten San Jose yet. Maybe we have, but
nope.
But we've beaten Anaheim every time we played them. So, mm-hmm. And then in Chicago, we've got to play them, and every time that they beat us out in the first round or second round, they won the Stanley Cup every time they did that. So it was kind of interesting that we had more than just one rival. A real rival would be Chicago, of course, and then Detroit. But those other teams are rivals to a degree.
And I happen to agree. I do think that if you look at the rankings, if you say top five rivals of the Nashville Predators, I think the Chicago Blackhawks are absolutely at one right now, and only because I honestly think the matchup is a little closer. You know, these are teams that, you know, look, whenever Detroit came in, first off, you hated the fact that it was 50-50, you know, Pred Wing to Predator fan in the place. And, you know, that was the first thing you hated. And beating Detroit was always fun. And quite frankly, sending Nick Lindstrom off to retirement with a series win is still a very, very sweet memory. And again, no disrespect to Lidstrom, great player,
oh,
but it's always nice to have that final appearance be something when, especially against Detroit, right before they leave the conference to go over to the other conference, to send them off with a playoff loss, coach. That's a little sweet right there.
It was, and especially after they had beaten us two other times before that, But that was a great series that we played. We lost the game. We split in here at our rink, and then we went and won twice in Detroit, and then we won game five in Detroit. So we lost the first game, I think, and went four straight, or I can't remember which one we won at home, but we ended up winning 4-1, and it was a great series. And then we blew game the second series at Phoenix, who was a good team, but they weren't. That was one of our best teams we had put together. And it just didn't go our way after that. But the Detroit series was very, very satisfying and rewarding for all of us.
Yeah, the ultimate in fireball hot takes right there on that second round series. But anyway, when you start looking at this, and it is fascinating. So I do. I absolutely put Chicago at the number one. I put Detroit at the number two only because they were big brother. We were little brother through the first few years.
Yep.
And every win over the Detroit Red Wings from the ice game in the first season, from the backdoor Bubba game to, you know, you think of all of the different games that you remember beating Detroit.
Yeah, they were the measuring stick.
They were.
How about the 9-0 game?
Oh, yeah.
Now, that one was a sweet one. No question about that. Now, when you keep going on that list, though, I mean, I think you probably put Anaheim solidly in that three spot.
Right.
But you know what's interesting is that 4-5, I look at it and go, just because of 2017, I put Pittsburgh in that four spot. Just because of that, and I know that is purely one-sided. Pittsburgh doesn't think one iota about the Nashville Predators, but that one still sticks in my craw. That, you know, I mean, again, you know, bad luck and injuries, and that happens all the time. But, you know, I just look at that and say, Ryan Johansson's in that final series. It's a much different outcome. I mean, call the offsides, all that other kind of good stuff. You know, the Forsberg offside, all that stuff. You look at where this team had that Pittsburgh team after a couple of games. I mean, you know, Subban had taken up residence in Crosby's head. I mean, you had a couple of things going right there, and then it just kind of fell apart. I put them at the four spot, and then probably in that five spot, the San Jose Sharks, only because we haven't beaten them in the doggone playoffs yet.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I'm hard-pressed to call things rivalry when each team doesn't have a win. I really subscribe to that school where it's like both teams got to have a win before it's a rivalry.
That's why Chicago's won.
Yeah, so like I don't really consider the Ducks a rival. You know, they ain't beat us yet.
Ooh, but I like that.
By that same token, I can't really say the Sharks are a rival because we haven't beaten them yet.
Ugh.
And at the same time, I think, you know, there are some really good budding rivalries because I do feel like Nashville and Colorado are going to...
Starting.
It's really starting there. Nashville and Dallas, I think,
agreed,
really there too. And honestly, St. Louis is another one. I think until Winnipeg kind of fell off a little bit, you know, you really saw the budding there. But in the division, I feel like Chicago and Minnesota are kind of the also-rans right now, just by virtue of where these teams are at in their process right now.
And coach, I want to ask you about this because you've seen the playoff, structure be at different points during your playing career, during your coaching career. But this is where I become such a big fan of the playoff structure as it stands right now. Getting those divisional playoff series. That's where these rivalries are born.
You're right, man. Look what happened. We didn't have anything going with Winnipeg. They come in and beat us in Game 7 a couple years ago, and now they are also in a rival the next year. Everybody is anticipating Winnipeg coming to town. But I agree with you. You have to have at least one win out of the series to be a rival. But I think as far as right now, I think you're right, Paul. I think it should be Chicago number one and Detroit number two. And then San Jose or Anaheim. And then I agree, those other three. Colorado's coming on as a big rival. We played them once in the playoffs so far, and they played very well against us in that series. And then we've got Dallas has definitely become a rival. And St. Louis, I'm surprised that it hasn't been a rival as much because we've only played them twice over the years, maybe only once.
The proximity.
We beat them only once.
When you
that's why that hasn't been only one time. You play them only one time. You got to have more. It's not a rivalry when you only have one series. So
yeah, it's not enough. Agreed. So I mean, we're off and running right now. We're going to go talk a little bit about the evolution of the enforcer in the National Hockey League with one of the better ones in hockey. The Grim Reaper going to be joining us, Stu Grimson. See, not only an enforcer, but he's also a lawyer. Okay, that makes and he's insert joke here, and then also an author. He has a book out right now called The Grim Reaper: The Life and Career of a Reluctant Warrior. So you can get that on Amazon.com. Stu Grimson joining us next right here on Slapshot Radio, and you know what? They've been with us since day one of the show. The premier sponsor of Slapshot Radio, Doctors Jane Bacon and Aileen Kruger over at Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Man, they have your safety top of mind right now during these crazy times that we live in. The safety measures are in place, but not only that, they do make it really comfortable to get your dental needs taken care of in a most effective manner. They offer all the latest in dental technology, including things like in-office whitening, sedation dentistry. Check out their website at WeBrightonSmiles.com. Call for an appointment at 615-872-7762. That's 615-872-7762. Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. We brighten smiles. Slapshot Radio. Max is on it tonight. I mean, you know, first cut out, and he is just the wheels of steels are flying right now. Paul McCann, Zach McCann, Brent Peterson coming at you at Slapshot Radio. We're glad you're staying in with us tonight. An hour of hockey talk every week. I absolutely love it. And you know what? If you have to check out these videos, because apparently our next guest has the loudest salad in the world. That's what I keep hearing. And actually, our next guest, the author, lawyer, hockey player. I mean, this guy's done it all. The Grim Reaper himself, Stu Grimson. Stu, welcome back to Slapshot Radio. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm great. It's been far too long. How's everybody?
Well, we're
Zach, Brent, good to hear your voices.
We're all hanging in here. We're doing all right. You know, and what the heck? There's no sports going on, so what are we going to do? We're going to talk hockey. So, you know, Brent and Zach and I, we were talking a little bit about, you know, last week it was the best lines we could think of, and we went all the way back to the production line and all, you know, the French Connection, all of that. And this week we wanted to talk about the enforcer. We wanted to talk about the evolution of that role. And Stu, over your career, you saw the role of the enforcer, you know, evolve from the guy that was only out there to chuck knuckles to a guy that actually was expected to play.
Yeah, I did. And it was, you know, just I haven't been around the game for a good long while, certainly as an amateur and following the game, trying to, you know, make my way up the ranks and trying to penetrate an NHL roster, and then ultimately doing that and then coming out the other side of it and now following the game for a living as an analyst for NHL Network. You know, I've seen that role change dramatically, and it really has been an interesting evolution. At the end of the day, I think the enforcer type, as we would have defined him maybe during my era, that player has essentially been eliminated from NHL rosters, but there are still guys that provide that role, provide that element, and can play effective minutes at the same time. And it's been kind of a curious and interesting evolution to watch. I will say this, you know, I think we would be remiss if we're going to have this discussion in terms of the guys that have provided that element for their teams and have also been really effective players. You know, Petey may feel differently about this, but for me, I just think Bob Probert is the shining example of a guy, and this is probably the early, you know, half to say two-thirds of his career, but nobody was tougher, and nobody, I think, you know, provided as much balance just in terms of his ability to play. Let's not forget, Bob came within a whisker of having 30 goals at this level, but he was just really, really feared in this physical element, and he was also very effective just in terms of what he provided when it wasn't, you know, when it wasn't that physical element. So he, to me, is just a shining example of that ultimate balance.
Coach, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, Stewie, I totally agree with you. I think Probert was as good a player, a good player. He'd be a third-line player probably now today in today's game because of his toughness. He could handle the puck. He could do skating. He could do all those things. But I think I still would pick you over him any day.
But, and you know,
well, that's very kind of you, Katie. I appreciate that.
You know, the interesting thing, though, and you talked about that. I mean, but when you start talking about the enforcers of the past, you look at a Bob Probert who knocked on 30 goals one a year. You look at someone like a Dave Schultz who scored 20 in a year. I mean, you know, I think sometimes because that enforcer is known as, you know, as the fighter, as the guy that's going to be the protector, do you think that sometimes their hockey skills are underrated sometimes, Stu?
Oh, I think that's certainly true. I mean, when you kind of step into that role and you're prepared to play it and provide it for your team, you know, on a regular basis, there's no question about it. I think, you know, from perhaps the media's perspective, from the casual fan's perspective, that's the part of your game that seems to get the most attention because it tends to be the most, you know, the most stark, the most distinctive part of what you do. But there have been lots and lots of guys over the years. You know, you mentioned Dave Schultz, same era. What about a guy like, you know, Clark Gillies was very effective and and very feared. They used to say about Clark, and this is more Petey's era than mine, they used to say about Clark Gillies, let the man sleep. Do not wake the man up. But there's no question. I think that's a very fair thing to say, Paul, without question. However, with respect to people in the game, players and folks on the operations side, coaches, scouts, and the like, I think, you know, they tend to look at the game and the player with a little more scrutinizing an eye. And, you know, I think anybody you pull today that knows the game well would be pretty quick to, you know, laud a guy like Proby or a Schultz or a Clark Gillies for, you know, the skill they had that complemented the physical side of their game.
We're talking to the author of The Grim Reaper, The Life and Career of a Reluctant Warrior, available on Amazon, both in Kindle, hardcover, and in audiobook. Stu Grimson starting to get into voiceover territory. Watch out.
Hey, there you go.
So, Zach, you got a question for him?
Absolutely. So, Stu, you know, it's something that you see. It takes on almost a Western type of mythos when you get people talking about the enforcer and the code of hockey. You hear that phrase, the code, a lot. And you can kind of evoke those myriad images of gunslingers showing each other down. How do you think the code has evolved into today's modern NHL? And what does that mean for today's game?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting kind of unwritten series of rules, and that's probably even too formal, a label to ascribe to it, Zach. But I think there are a few essential tenets. The rule itself has evolved, but if it's possible to kind of parse that out and focus on not so much the role, but the way that the role is played or the principles behind the role, a lot of those tenets, those principles have kind of remained the same over time. And they kind of go along the lines of, you know, you never jump another guy. You never kind of drop your gloves and get the drop on another guy. You know, for the most part, two guys that are willing to go at it, you know, you need to kind of start on even terms. That's been around for a good long while. You know, other principles, like, you know, sometimes there were situations where I'm trying to engage my counterpart on the other team, and he's just not up to it. Maybe he's tweaked the shoulder. Maybe he's got a busted up hand, or maybe he's in, you know, just somewhere short of his best self. And sometimes you just have to give a guy like that a pass because it's the right thing to do. And, you know, maybe just to touch on a third, and there are others, the rookies coming up in the game. I mean, training camp and exhibition season used to be the time of year I hated the most because as an established guy, there was always some young buck coming up on the other side, especially when you were playing against the divisional rival in the preseason. He wanted to cut his teeth. He wanted to carve out his own niche. And you kind of feel obliged to honor, to give that young guy his opportunity because, hey, you know, it's not that long ago somebody gave you your opportunity. So it's really kind of, you know, we talk about the code. It's really just based on fundamental fairness, I think, at the end of the day, Zach.
We're on the line with Stu Grimson, author of The Grim Reaper, available at Amazon.com, The Life and Career of a Reluctant Warrior. Brent, you got a question for Stu?
Yeah, Stu, I see on every, until this break here, I come home and I see on every night, I have to look at your face every night when I come home and watch the game. And you do a great job on NHL Network. I was wondering who you thought was the best or the toughest guy in the league right as of right now. In this age, in this era, right now, who do you think is the toughest player in the league?
Yeah, it's a pretty good question, Petey. And, you know, I will say this. My kind of off-the-cuff sense of who's, you know, who's probably the most feared doing playing that role, to me it would probably have to be a Ryan Reeves. I just don't see too many people get the better of Ryan Reeves. And there, too, you know, while we're on the topic, he's a pretty effective player. He's really turned in some solid minutes, you know, for St. Louis, for Pittsburgh, and he's been pretty effective for Vegas. He really has been. But he seems to me, you know, just a big barrel-chested guy. He kind of rears back and chucks him. He's a bit of a force out there. He really seems that way. But I will say this, you know, it's until you kind of – let me say it this way. When you're in that mix, you're in that stable of guys that kind of do that role, that's when you truly develop an appreciation. So I say from a distance it's Ryan Reeves, but the guys that kind of do that today might have a different feel for that. But that would be my, you know, my opinion from my 35,000-foot view.
He is the author of The Grim Reaper, The Life and Career of a Reluctant Warrior, available on Amazon.com. He's also on the NHL Network. Almost any time you turn on the NHL Network, he's the one and only Stu Grimson. Stu, thanks so much for taking the time and joining us and sharing your experiences. We certainly appreciate it.
Hey, good to be on with you guys. Always appreciate talking hockey with you.
All righty. Stu Grimson on Slapshot Radio, and we will be right back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Paul McCann, Zach McCann, the coach Brent Peterson with us. And interesting conversation with Stu Grimson, coach. And I'd kind of like to get your take on the evolution of the enforcer. I mean, we've seen a steady decline in fighting majors in the National Hockey League, you know, really over the, you know, over the last 15 seasons especially. It just seems like that element of the game has become less and less important and more de-emphasized. For the
you're right. The enforcer part of it has gone away, but you still have to have big guys that can handle it, take care of themselves and take care of their teammates, or you just get run over with. You can't have a bunch of small guys on the ice and then not do, and, you know, unless you just use your speed and just stay out of any scrums or anything happen, you still have to fight in the corners for the puck. And that's when the enforcers used to always come out. And the one thing about a good enforcer was he would only fight the other guy's tough guys. Some enforcers would pick on guys like me and guys, other little guys. That
skill guys.
No chance at beating them. So it was an interesting situation. About 20, like you said, about 15 to 20 years ago, they started playing less and less, and they started getting them out of the game a little bit more and more. There wasn't like slap shot or anything, and it just dwarfed out of the game, and everybody thought you could go with four lines and just throw four lines over the boards, and that one guy that was an enforcer, he couldn't play, and he couldn't play keep up, and he didn't have the skills to skate, shoot, and with the puck and handle the puck like he had to do to keep up to those players. So they just went by the wayside. And they dressed their 12 best forwards every night, or teams dressed their 12 best forwards, and it ended up being an interesting situation. Because some teams would stay with a tough guy on the fourth line, and they double shift like a Crosby on the fourth line and things like that. So coaches did all kinds of things. But right now, Ryan Reeves is the guy that I was thinking of when I asked him that question before the break. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's as tough as they come. Plus, he can skate, he can shoot, he can handle the puck, and he can make a play, and he sees the ice, and you gotta watch out. If he gets a head of steam out, and you're coming on the net, you'll be dead by the time he'll just be right there hitting you. He'll hit you every shift, and he's done a real good job for the team he's played on.
Well, and you think about it. I mean, you always thought. And again, you know, I go back to, you know, my childhood watching the Broad Street Bullies. If anybody touched Bobby Clark, Dave Schultz was on him like white on rice. I mean, we saw that in the 80s and 90s with Marty McSorley jumping on anybody that would go near Wayne Gretzky. But you have definitely seen the game evolve,
you know,
Zach.
It is funny because I think evolve is the right word because In my mind, Enforcers are just as prevalent today as they've ever been. It's just different. And here's my thing. I think your enforcers in the modern-day NHL are your Corey Perrys, are your ones. They're not enforcers anymore.
They're disturbers.
They're villains. Yeah. That's what they are.
Okay.
They're the ones who come in and just disturb. They do exactly that. They disturb everything on the ice. They take you off your game, and they've evolved from that idea of being, you know, I'm going to go out there and defend, you know, my teammates with honor to, okay, that's not really in the game anymore, so I'm going to pull, like, you know, a heel from, to use an old wrestling term.
Right.
That's the new modern-day NHL enforcer. The idea isn't to beat you up. It's to take you off your game and get you so frustrated to where you take yourself off your game.
It's a good point, and I mean, and it's interesting because you know, let's face it, I mean, you know, Brent, you had an old teammate that was a pretty good enforcer in his own right, and Larry Playfair.
Yeah, I just could have mentioned that because Larry was, I played 3 years of junior with Larry and then 4 years of pro in Buffalo with him, and I know we got drafted the night that we were playing together, and a guy came up, and I came across the middle, and I was the captain of the team and one of the top scorers, so I was a scorer back in junior. And I came across the middle, and the guy came up, stepped up, and hit me. And by the time I picked myself up, Jared Larry was sitting in the penalty box giving me the thumbs up. So he took those kind of people took care of you. And I guarantee you, you played 6 inches taller when you had a guy like that on the ice with you. As long as he could keep up and do the thing he needed to do, but it was just unbelievable. Larry played for, he never lost one fight that I know of. I think Jimmy Mann might have beat him once, but Larry would stand up and his knuckles would scratch on the ice when he'd play.
Now that is the key, and you just said it. And you know, I think we've heard, I've certainly heard, you know, Terry Crisp talk about the, you know, every team needing at least one miserable SOB. And, you know, every team needing that guy that does make you play a little bit taller, make you, you know, not as afraid to go to the middle, not as afraid to go into the corner, because you knew a Larry Playfair had your back, a Bob Probst had your back, a Stu Grimson had your back on something like that. And I still think, to your point, I think it's still important in this game that you have that kind of I'll use the word protection. I mean, it is a little bit of the law of the jungle, but when you look at, you know, look at the reaction that the Predators had when there was some retribution to Corey Perry, when there was some retribution that came back this season, that made a difference
him,
for this team.
Even to Robert Bertuzzo.
Exactly.
When, I mean, both, you know, right, promulgated by Jared Tenorti.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, that certainly does have a place in here because it is just a natural, primal, reptilian response in your lizard brain when you see someone like, oh, he hurt my guy, me come after him. Hooray! You know, that's essentially how it goes. And there have been some legendary enforcers, and I think, you know, it's interesting when you think about the one who hasn't been mentioned, oddly enough, but whose name gets mentioned all the time, Gordie Howe.
Oh, gosh, yes.
The Gordie Howe hat trick is a thing for a reason, and one of the thirds of that is a fight.
You know, you look at that, and I mean, and you look at some of the, you know, the quote-unquote enforcers that have played in Nashville.
Yeah,
I mean, you go back to the first couple of years of Patrick Côté, mm-hmm, and a Denny Lambert, coach. I mean, those were two, you know, popular guys because they wouldn't be afraid to drop them.
Well, Patrick Côté had the most majors in the league that year.
Yep,
entirely, and he wanted so badly to beat up anybody from Dallas because he came from Dallas. He hated Hitchcock. He just was all wired up every night we played Dallas, so we couldn't even put him in the Dallas game because he'd take 5 penalties in the first trade. We'd be down 3-0 already.
Well, and again, so there's your downside. But
that's
again,
the downside, right?
But you look at, and I will tell you, you know, as long as I've watched this game, one of the most devastating fights I have ever seen took place right in front of my position at 501 Broadway. When Wade Belak came in and just dropped Donald Brashear like a, yep, bad habit. I mean, I've never seen him drop like that, Zach.
Yeah, that was an incredible fight. But honestly, for me growing up, and again, I don't have really the memories of the 70s or 80s because, you know, I wasn't alive.
Yeah.
But for me, the player who I idolized, you know, growing up in that regard was Jordan Tutu.
Oh, yeah.
He had the right amount of skill to go with it. And just, I mean, the image that is etched in my mind is Tutu bloodied, raising up, you know, Tutu on his fingers, going to the penalty box. And as a kid, you had to love it when you saw something like that.
And coaching a player like that, Coach, I mean, it is almost like having a tiger by the tail, isn't it?
Well, once you let them go till it's time to rein them back in, but because some guys would go overboard and get bad penalties and do dumb things, but the guy who knew when your team was down and low and not looking up on the bench and a guy like Stu Grimson was a veteran guy who knew when he should fight and when he should stay out of it, and he would fight to get the guys going. He wouldn't just fight. Nobody wants to fight just to fight, but he knew that was his job. And he did it well, and he helped the guys get themselves feeling better about themselves with a good fight out there. You always see the guy, team goes up 3-0 real quick, and sure enough, out comes the toughest guy they got, and they want to start a fight right there just to get change the momentum of the game. And that's what those kind of enforcers when Stewie was in the NHL did all the time. They did they changed the momentum of the game around, and then they knew when not to take a penalty and turn the other cheek. And I know it's kind of not manly to turn the other cheek, but you have to. Sometimes turn the other cheek and just walk away from it. And that's the way you got your money. That's how you were paid. And that's how you did your job every time.
It is important to do that every now and again. And I'm gonna ask a question, and I'm going to ask for the answer after the break because we're up against one. But I'm going to ask this from both of you. Should fighting be banned from the game? And we're going to answer that question when we come back after I tell you about Carter Church from Weikart Realtors, the Andrews Group. Man, you know, Carter, what a great guy. I mean, this man knows what he is doing when it comes to this real estate market, this fast-moving, this really challenging, quite frankly, real estate market going on right now. This man has the marketing experience you need to get your home sold or bought at a good price in this market. Call Carter today at 615-429-2044. That's 615-429-2044. Carter Church, your real estate professional if you're buying or if you're selling. And we will be right back right here on Slapshot Radio on ESPN Radio 102.5 The Game. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Nashville's best sports talk. Paul McCann, Zach McCann, Brent Peterson coming at you. And you know, one of the things that really kind of upset me about this entire thing, I mean, you know, obviously with all of what's going on, all of the social distancing, the quarantining, all of that, but something else was really stolen from Nashville this week. And it would have been a very, very special night at Bridgestone Arena this Wednesday night because if the season played the way it should have, the Montreal Canadiens would have been in town. Shea Weber had just returned to the lineup. And Wednesday night's game would have been the 1,000th game of Shea Weber's career. And what better place to do it would have been with Montreal in Nashville. It's a shame that got taken away from not only Nashville, but the hockey world. But I felt I would be remiss if I didn't mention that as far as that goes. But I asked a question before the break, and I wanted to see of my two co-hosts here what they thought about, you know, the every now and again when there's been a couple of fighting majors, someone will come out and bring out the inner Don Cherry in almost all of us and say, oh, fighting needs to go away completely. And I want to ask you, Coach, first, do you think that fighting needs to go away completely in the National Hockey League?
Well, I don't think it should, and I don't think it will, but I don't think it should be for a couple of reasons. First off, there's hardly any fights anymore anyway, so there's not a lot of fights. And that's second off, I don't think that I think you have to have, like, if you just had a fight and then you got kicked out of for the rest of that game, that would be okay with me at the very minimum. But then if you got another suspension, another game or something for adding on to it, for having a fight, I think that's ridiculous. So I just think fighting should be there. And we saw this year how much better we played with Tenorti and Holzer on the back end there. We played, usually a tough guy plays in the wing or somewhere. You can just go up down the wing and hit people and run into people and get the puck out in and out. But the defensemen really have to move the puck and handle it and carry it. And those two guys did a real good job for us before we had to have this little break. So I think that Tenorti really gave us a lot of courage when we played in St. Louis and when we play Dallas. So it was a good situation for us because he wasn't even here when those incidents happened. And he still was sticking up for the team. Boy, he grew a lot of courageous guys were there that night that he helped us do that for.
No question about that one. Zach, your take.
I mean, this is probably not going to surprise anyone who's heard me speak about any length on anything, but unfortunately, it does need to go because at the end of the day, the human cost isn't worth it. You look at the lives that have been lost due to it. You look at the autopsies of former players who have been, you know, noted, you know, pugilists throughout their careers, and you see the brain injuries, you see the CTE post-death. Mm-hmm. You see players who have unfortunately taken their own lives due to getting addicted to painkillers and that sort of thing. And unfortunately, as much as I enjoy, you know, the camaraderie, as much as the primal urge of, yeah, kill him goes into it, because Lord knows I've been guilty of, you know, enjoying that too. But at the same time, the human cost is too great. And that's really the unfortunate thing about it.
And, you know, I absolutely see where you're coming from. I do. And when you look at it in those terms, if it was fighting alone that caused that, I would say, you know what, yeah. But I think we have to recognize, as we've recognized in football, where CTE honestly has been recognized as an even bigger issue, mostly because of just the hitting.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think mostly it's recognized more because you get more press in the NFL.
True.
But at the same time, yes, absolutely, you know, but at the same time, you can't just say, there are other things that cause it, so screw it. You know?
No, absolutely. I don't completely disagree with that.
I think it's a preventable thing. And I think that, yeah, you do need to reconcile where other aspects of the game are that's happening as well. And because someone does need to take care of the players in that regard, because it is literally shortening their lives. And, I mean, honestly, if you don't have fighting, if you don't have that, then you honestly are going to have players playing for longer, too, which increases their earning potential. I mean, so,
you know,
I think there's a lot of arguments being made, and I can see both sides of it. But
and that's the key. I don't think there is a black and white on this.
No.
I don't think there really is, you know, and I think when you hear, you hear those that have played the game versus those of us that have watched the game, because I look at this game because of the speed and emotion that gets played inside this game. And Coach, I want to get your take on this, that it makes it, I don't want to say impossible, because I think that we have seen a reduction in the amount of fighting.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where, you know, does this become the appropriate balance?
And that's what's going to happen. There is a balance there somewhere, but it's going to happen only when there's rivalries, like we talked about earlier. Like, we're not going to worry about going to New Jersey and have a big brawl with them, or have to fly put a bunch of fighters on the ice. Because it's just there's no rivalry there.
Right.
But if they, like, who hit Arvidsson into the net?
Robert Bertuzzo.
Bertuzzo, okay? We were thinking about, everybody in the organization was thinking about that Bertuzzo for 2 months until we played him again.
Mm-hmm.
Not every day, not all the time, but, you know, we were thinking about it. And certainly we tried to get at him, and he didn't get as successful as we wanted to be, but, I mean, those kind of things happen, and it's just I think you have to be in a rivalry, a real, like, we played St. Louis twice this year, back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, oh boy, if there's anything happening in game one, game two, it's going to be, that's your toughest guys in that. If there was an incident that happened, and it did happen, and we didn't play them for a long time, so we played them 2 games in 2 nights, and we waited 2 months to play 2 games in 2 nights again, so, but... It's a hard thing. Like you said, there's no right or wrong. There's no black and white. I just think that you get your guys that want to play 5 and 6 inches taller, and they're a little bit, you know, like the scouts say, he's a little bit scared of things, and you just have to. It's tough to talk about these things, because I had five concussions. I wasn't a fighter. I got one or two fights in my lifetime, but I wasn't a fighter. But I had five concussions, and now I have Parkinson's. And nobody's saying that that's what gave me my Parkinson's was the blows to the head and the concussions I had. But it could have been. And same with those guys that have the other, when the guys that took their lives and that, and they're all tough guys, just having to be all tough guys. I don't know whether it was coincidence or whether it was because they hit too much or whatever. It's but true. I don't know if you even hurt or you even hurt a guy as big as Larry Playfair and as big as Dave Semenko and as big as Dave Schultz and those kind of guys. I don't think you can hurt him at all. But it's like I said, it's not. There's no right or wrong to anything. I don't think.
Now it is an interesting discussion. Go ahead, Zach.
No, I think it is fascinating to think about when you have these different facets of the game that it is an innately dangerous game.
Sure.
I mean, come on, you've got people
skating. Right.
You've got people wearing kitchen knives on their feet going around crashing into people. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So at the same time, you do look at, what's going on, and I think this is where something that hasn't been discussed yet that has, I think, let down the league a little bit, and I don't think it's necessarily their fault. I think it's the fault of the owners, but I think having an extremely competent NHL player safety department, I think, is where you're going to see that kind of come down. And I think you saw it initially back when, what was it?
Who was in
charge? Yeah, back when Shanahan was in charge.
Yep.
You had harsh suspensions, and you had that coming down, and the owners tell them to back off, and now you've got the current regime under George Parros, which is, I think, a little too lenient a lot of times.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Zach. I totally agree with you. If they came down hard on these guys, they don't have to give them. Bertuzzo doesn't need 25 games for hitting, Arvey into the net. But, I mean, he should get more than that. He would get four games or five games.
Four or five.
I mean, you see.
That's ridiculous. See, what he did, two deliberate cross checks to the back of the head. And the back, and then
no padding and everything,
Exactly. So that was ridiculous. And I think if they got tougher, these guys would be a lot like. Like you said earlier, you don't have to be a big guy to be a disturber. And look at the guy from Boston. He's 4'2" tall, and he's
It's a great point, Coach. I mean, it's funny you talk about Bertuzzo, but I'm sorry. I think the most egregious one happened was on national television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's things like that. That always put me on the side of, if you put someone out with something blatant like that, then the suspension needs to match the amount of games the person you put out. A blatant elbow like that, I mean, and look, do I have gold colored glasses on right now? Maybe. But it's things like that. It's Reed Lowe's hit to J.P. Dumont. Mm-hmm. It's you can
Scott Stevens on Paul Kariya.
Go ahead, Coach.
Scott Stevens on Lindros too. There's two big guys going at it.
Mm-hmm. No question. So I think honestly, I think you're absolutely right on that. Before I've got one thing I got to get in, and poor Max is going to kill me because I'm going to go over, but I do want to recognize today is National Doctors' Day in the United States. And quite frankly, these men, these women, these healthcare folks are our heroes right now.
They're our enforcers.
And you got that right. And God love them. Every day needs to be National Healthcare Workers Day, but I just couldn't let this show go without saying a huge thank you to everyone out there on the front lines, everyone at every hospital, at every medical facility in this nation, especially here in Nashville. We love you. Protect yourselves. And we thank you for the hard work that you are doing. And it is much, much appreciated. And you know what? That's it. We're done for another hour here on Slapshot Radio. A big thank you to our guest, Stu Grimson, the Grim Reaper. Make sure you check out his book, The Grim Reaper, available on Amazon.com. We do thank our sponsors, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry, Carter Church from Weikart Realtors, The Andrews Group, Cool Springs Wines and Spirits on Moores Lane in Cool Springs with curbside delivery, and Lazy Boy Furniture Gallery. Shop them online at lazyboy.com. When you visit one of our sponsors, make sure you tell them you heard about them on Slapshot Radio and thank them for their support. For our producer, Max, our co-host, Brent Peterson, and Zach McCann, I'm Paul McCann saying good night and good hockey.